Hola, cage fighting connoisseurs. Don't listen to the chatter coming from my co-host. This is Kid Native Bloody Elbo here for the infamous patented Care Don't Care preview of UFC Fight Night Bigfoot versus Mir. Joined once again by the inevitable, the inimitable, the ineffable, the ineluctable Eugene S. Robinson, author of Fight. Everything you ever wanted to know about ass kicking, but were afraid you'd get your ass kicked for ass kicking.
Ow! Yeah, how could you? How could you? That, like, I'm a 95th yard line. Bobble it.
I've always been a goal line fumbler. Eugene, ask any girl I dated in high school. Just,
she's
what
got
are you wearing the Brazilian colors for? You rooting for Bigfoot?
Wrong! Wrong. Not Brazil, baby.
Is this, what is that?
I love Jamaica.
Jamaica? All right. I thought Jamaica had some red in there. Where's the tricolors come from?
No, this is Jamaica, man. I'm telling you. Look, does that help you?
Jamaica. Okay. I'm with you.
I got a Brazilian standing right here. He's denying it's Brazil, so.
I see. Well, good to know that you're unbiased for this Care Don't Care preview. But we delayed it today because you specially requested so we could discuss Lorenzo Fertitta and Dana White's press conference yesterday announcing the new airtight, problem-solved, done deal, wipe your hands, drugs are out of the UFC press conference yesterday. Are you?
You know what makes me super happy? You got to realize on Planet Eugene, you know what happened?
What's
On Planet Eugene, Knuckle Up came out on Monday, face-punching Monday. The bald guy and the Fertitta is tuned in. I wonder what Eugene's talking about today. And they listen to the show and they go, by golly, he's right. All testing all the time. Call a press conference. And they call a press conference. And much like Metallica ripping us off with the use of Marianne Faithfull and not giving us public credit, they call a press conference and they say, you know, this is what we're going to do, point for point, exactly what Eugene said, but we shall not mention Eugene's name.
I see. Well,
H.P. Lovecraft. He shall not be mentioned.
It's good to be a thought leader, Eugene. And those in the know know that Lorenzo has taken his cues from you. When we see him in his Jamaica soccer T-shirt,
in his $30 million Malibu beachfront home, kind of like mine, you know.
Kind of like. It's vaguely. They both have roofs.
No, mine has a roof.
So. I mean, what do you think? I thought it was a little vague. I think they had to do it. They took a brutal PR savaging last month between the John Jones cocaine thing, the Nick Diaz marijuana thing, and the Anderson Silva panoply of drugs.
Well, you know what happened? I mean, they based a lot of their act on football and other professional sports, football, the number one sport in America, which Dana has gone on record as saying that he's competing against. And they said, well, look, we can do what they can do, not realizing that in functioning and form, they're closer to professional wrestling because there are no seasons in MMA. If you have a season, you can get away with random drug testing in season because only the real fucking dummies are going to go into an active season still on. You know, but when you, like pro wrestling, when there is no season, you got a 365-day incentive to be fucking using. You know, so they had to do something, and whether or not they actively and aggressively pursue it, and guys are willing to take the chance at two to 4 year suspension. You know, what they've got now is something that they can turn to the world and go, you know, like baseball. You think they got all the cheaters out of baseball? No, but baseball has got a PR, you know, a firewall against the guys who were caught. You know, A-Rod has got his ass spanked. These guys have gotten their asses spanked. You know, Barry Bonds is still persona non grata. They have taken care of it in the eyes of competitors, which are other sports and people chasing their ad dollars, who, if you don't think they're making hay about this, I remember one of the buyers at Turner, or one of the big, was leaned on when MMA was trying to come up, was leaned on by the people at Budweiser, who were being leaned on by the boxing folks about this blood sport, this human cockfighting. I mean, you wouldn't think in the upper echelons of power that people are giving a shit about that, but these guys are fighting a battle tooth and nail, and if Budweiser gets a call from their friends at boxing and say you got to whack this guy, they're going to whack this guy. So you can't give, you know, comfort to the enemy, and so they got to do it. It's got to be zero tolerance, 100%, all testing all the time, And I'm not saying that guys shouldn't use, but I'm saying you're going to have to be well craftier than you've been now, or start hanging out with Victor Conti. You know.
Yes, they're going to have to up their game if they want to keep using, if this stuff goes through. Now, they didn't announce any specifics beyond the July 1st start date. And for all the talk of the two-year and four-year suspensions, they just said they would lobby for that with the commissions. They're still leaving this up to the commissions, even though when they hold events in England or Australia, and to a lesser extent Brazil, they basically are the commission. Now, Brazil has its own commission, but the UFC has a lot of influence on that commission, even more so than they have on the title.
And this is what's made people paranoid. I mean, I've read the pros' comments. They say, and I've heard muttering and seen the postings. They said this is like, I don't know if you read that book by C.P. Snow, Two Cultures, and then the answer book, Two Cultures, ? By F.R. Leavis. These British kind of intellectuals back in the 50s, but these guys, the posters and the real deep conspiracy theorists are saying that this hasn't changed business at all, and that in actual fact what has happened, it's created a two-tier system where favorites will get a buy because, you know, there'll be a backroom deal, and the guys who are troublemakers or not as significant as the A-list players will get reamed. But you know what? I was interviewing somebody about poverty, and I was like, here's a truism. Poor people have gotten screwed since time immemorial, and nothing's going to change that, no matter how many anti-poverty programs you have. That's peanuts, you know.
Mark 4:25, to he that hath shall be given, to he that hath not shall be taken away, even to the last. That's Jesus Christ himself.
Yep. Yeah, or Martin Luther, who thought if you saw somebody who was indigent on the street, you should actually break his arm. That was what he said. Martin Luther, you break his arm and send him on his way with much additional knowledge.
That Martin Luther.
How do you like the German theologian, man? Those guys are sensitive guys, you know.
A lot of feels there coming out of Martin Luther. Yep. Yeah, but the thing they've been in lately, for the last couple years, I would say ever since Overeem got popped, has been this bad position where the scrutiny on the lower tier guys has been the same, where it's just fight night testing, which is any idiot can beat that for the most part.
Right.
But then suddenly the Nevada Athletic Commission started testing guys like Alistair Overeem out of competition. They've chased Alistair Overeem around, Wanderlei Silva, they popped Chael Sonnen, they popped Anderson Silva, John Jones. To me, it's like it created this unfortunate situation where guys would reach the top at one level of competition, i.e. not being effectively tested, and then suddenly at the point when they're about to make the organization a lot of money, then they're vulnerable and it's a new set of rules. Alistair Overeem hadn't been being tested like that. He was used to being tested on fight night only and urine tests only.
Right.
And for boom, suddenly they're chasing him around at press conferences months before the fight. You know, he clearly wasn't ready for that. And that took Overeem out. He was about to have a headlining UFC heavyweight title fight. And then, he never did get his title shot. Vitor Belfort's another guy. These guys basically going down in flames because of this randomized testing. I think that having a level playing field and having a set of rules that applies to you the whole time you're in the UFC is better for everybody.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. Because this is it's a weird thing. Like we've said, this is not really drug testing. It's intelligence testing. That this is not really honesty. I think the reality of it is that I don't know how many people listening have actually taken steroids, but I think that the most noteworthy and underreported factor are the psychological issues that kick in. I mean, you take steroids and you want to take steroids. It's not like the need and the bite that you get from heroin, but if you feel good, it's hard to fathom wanting to feel not good. You know?
It's like eating a lot of sugar. My mother-in-law brought over a cherry pie for no reason Monday night, and so have it for breakfast Monday and then Tuesday, and now here I am. I'm wanting an extra snack break for no reason. You just get a hankering. You get the craving. Gosh.
You brought it over for a reason, my friend.
Just to get it out of her house. That's why she brought it over. Maybe she thought
it was wrong. Get Nate out of the picture. adult onset diabetes. Boom, he's gone. You know?
You're weaving a sinister portrait of my mother-in-law.
The tangled web is woven when first we practice to deceive.
I am having tea with sugar for no reason. I even put butter in my tea because we're out of cream. I mean, I'm just dancing with the devil here.
You see? So it's, I mean, you know, I would venture a guess that, yeah, maybe to get through an 8-hour training day, 10-hour training day, it's probably a necessary factor. But, you know, you could, if you're going through 8-hour, 10-hour training days, you could probably cruise in a month, you know, taper off, you know, do your cycle, taper off a month before, and go into your fight night physically. You know, I mean, this is what made a big difference for me with weightlifting. I read some study that said that fatigue has got nothing to do with it. That, you know, if your bicep can lift, you know, a 90 pounds, it can lift 90 pounds whether or not you had a nap that day. The issue is willingness, you know. So I think a lot of people, and this goes back to psychological factors, a lot of people like, man, okay, getting up for a 10-hour day, fine. But getting my head, my level of aggression, and I think fundamentally, you're only going to get two types of mental framework or two types of guys who will compete in this system. The guys with seriously insoluble emotional difficulties who will be able to go into fight night with an outplay sense of entitlement, and then you'll get just guys who are really super gifted athletes, you know. So I think the sport will be guys like, you know, John Jones and, you know, Anderson Silva, GSP, supremely gifted athletes, and then guys who are just hard cases, you know, like, I don't know, Josh Barnett or something. So,
well, speaking of Anderson Silva, what do you make of the, you know, fail a drug test, pass a drug test, fail a drug test, and then the last one where he had some substances in the system that weren't necessarily on the banned list, but they went ahead and told everybody since he hadn't disclosed.
As soon as I saw the Azepams in there, I was like, I could tell, man. I could tell that. I mean, remember we were saying that back the camera from the dressing room, that the vibe off of him was not, that there was just another vibe, another thing happening with him, you know? I mean, sometimes you get the yips, and then you get nervous, man. You get
Very much reminded me of the way Fedor was never the same after he got tapped out by Fabricio Werdum. This is a guy who was known for his steely, icy, calm demeanor and able to face any kind of hardship. But it seems like that winning all the time thing was feeding on itself. And once Fedor lost, then he suddenly was jumpy and anxious and trying to force the knockout and no longer calm, cool, and collected. And for Anderson Silva, I mean, you have to be a robot not to be freaked out after snapping your shin in half using your go-to technique. I mean, the low kick was his safety. I mean, that was his fastball down the middle. I mean, that was his jab, his number one.
Yeah, but you're building a case for cause, and I've seen people start to do this in the press, and I want to warn against it because I think that, you know, it's like, okay, what it creates a scenario where Anderson Silva's steroid usage was therapeutic, and I don't think it was therapeutic. Yeah, it you know, steroids aided muscle building. Yeah, I think it was all about his head, and I think the presence of azepams was short indication that, like he said, I mean, he and GSP melted down.
Let's talk about what that stuff is. It's
the same shit that's anti-anxiety, right?
Yeah. It could even have been Valium. The way it's processing your body, all we know is the metabolites that showed up in the system. We don't necessarily know what form he took it in. So people are saying, oh, this is a form of anti-anxiety used for alcohol addiction. That's not necessarily the case. It could have been just he was popping a Valium because he was nervous.
And that he could easily get cover from if he's got a sports shrink psychotherapist, you could get cover for, you know, that, I'm less worried about that. But what it says is, this is, you know, I mean, the company that we got, Skullgame.com, came from Mac Avenue Skullgame, head game. It's the greatest portion, largest majority of the game, man, is the head. And realistically, I think that the, I don't think the sport's going to be better because you got guys who can't train 10 hours a day who don't. I think it's going to be better because it's going to reward guys who are here. The strength is here, you know. And I think that's one of the things that people miss with John Jones and why he's so special. Okay, he could have been having megalomaniacal flights of fancy brought on by cocaine fueled, since that seems to be a byproduct of cocaine usage. But I think you have to be to the manner born with something like that. I mean, for example, a guy can be beating me, actively tapping me out, and I'm not thinking, damn, I'm losing. You know what I'm thinking? An actual fact, a window into my head as I'm getting tapped out or even brutalized by a guy who's much better than me on the mat, I'm thinking, I'm better than him. You know, there is no measure by which this guy is besting me. Look at him. You know, my sense of superiority is insane.
You got to cling to something, Eugene. You got to cling to something.
So, I mean, you know, but I'm not acting like I really believe this. So, I mean, fortunately, you know, physically my body is like, ha-ha, fuck you. If I were 23, 24, I mean, listen, when my body, when steroids naturally hit my body, when I was 16, 17, I used to stand on the subway tracks or on the subway platform in New York City, and I used to think, I could stop this train. I know if I jump on this track that I could stop this train. And it became an overpowering, I think they call it hysteria passio, where I had to, like, back up from the tracks because it was becoming an overwhelming compulsion. And then finally I realized, yeah, you would, 100% of the time, you would stop the train if you jumped in front of it. You just wouldn't, you wouldn't be okay.
No, no. The train would come screeching, grinding to a halt.
Grinding to a halt. So
as they applied the brakes and smeared your body all down the
track. Right. So I mean, it's gonna be interesting, the guys. If they're complete about this, the guys who actually manage to be champions in the next 5 years are going to be a real interesting. It's going to be a real interesting psychodemographic, a real interesting psychodemographic.
I also think it should cut back on some of the overtraining, because I think the 8-hour, 10-hour training days, the 5-6-day-a-week training schedules, that's just stupid, and it's overkill, and that's why we're getting so many injuries in the sport, and so. Hopefully it'll cut back on some of that, and more guys can adopt a Nick Diaz sort of triathlon endurance conditioning. And also,
you got to realize these guys are pioneers, man. I mean, we're saying, okay, maybe back off from 10-hour training days, but we don't know one way or another whether or not, you know, I mean, you gotta go out to that far edge before it makes sense to bring it back. Is a 10-hour training day, you know, Cain Velasco says the reality is, if it is, the more you do this, the better you get. But there is such a thing as, you know, training smarter and not harder. So
yeah, I mean, look at how much Cain Velasquez has been injured. But now let's turn to the point of the show, which is the UFC coming out of Brazil. It's the Porto Alegre UFC fight night coming this Sunday night, not Saturday night, out of Brazil. It's going to be on Fox Sports 1, the prelims and the main card. But two fights are going to be on UFC Fight Pass, beginning with lightweights Yvonne George and Josh Shockley. But first, Eugene, we need the disclaimer.
If you guys are UFC fighters or Bellator fighters, even World Series of Fighting fighters, if you're a professional or if you're an amateur fighter and we happen to mention your name here and we don't care about you fighting, has nothing to do with your skills, your talents, your abilities, the cut of your jib. It has everything to do with the fact that the organization you're fighting for has failed to put any kind of serious marketing heft behind you, and we don't know who you are, so don't be a crybaby and a bedwetter, but I toughen up. Fight a fight that's memorable, and we'll be talking about you next week.
Exactly. Sometimes the guys get your attention, we don't remember their name, but we're working on that. So, lightweights.
There've been a bunch of guys who've made it from at this point now. Aya Quinta, Chris Collard Greens, a bunch of guys who've made it from. Paul Felder. See, I'm remembering the names who've made it from. Don't care to care. So.
Exactly. So we've got lightweights Yvonne George and Josh Shockley.
Don't care.
Me neither. Bantamweights Douglas Silva de Andrade versus Cody Gibson.
I don't care. But you should. There's an additional disclaimer that I should launch here, and that's that my ass is still kind of raw over the last few weeks. But the UFC is really smart. Like I'd put all my eggs in the Ronda Kat Zingano fight, and then I started hearing nasty rumors about Kat maybe not passing tests, and then I was like, okay, I can't put any eggs in the basket, and I was starting to feel adrift, like St. Martin's in the Fields. I was just starting to feel adrift, and then they came out with this May card, and it was like, if you're even a casual fan, I got it. You're bringing out the Howitzes. You got me. You got me with that. Presuming we can make it to that May card, you got me. So I'm still provisional. So in other words, you got to be fucking a strong presence at this point, given my tender emotional state, for me to get you from don't care to care. So I'm sorry, Cody Gibson. Under normal circumstances, I might be kind of interested in what you're doing, but at this point, I can't. The whole sport has become a gicked. you know.
Eugene caught the UFC walking out on him, basically. Just walking down the street with another man is what, you know, broke his heart, cheating on him, seeing somebody else. Somebody called drugs. Yep. Somebody called cheating.
Yeah.
And poor, innocent Eugene was heartbroken. Heartbroken. So neither of us care about either of the UFC fight pass cards. I almost care about Cody Gibson. If he had beat Manny Gambarian last time out, I'd give him a care, but he didn't, so I won't. So, welterweights, Wendell Oliveira versus TJ Waldberger.
I like TJ Waldberger ever since.
I do too.
One of the posters gave me a hard time. How can you not care? This guy is a jiu-jitsu great, and he's bad. And I was like, oh yeah. And Waldberger goes out and gets pasted, and that gave me a great moment of joy. The next knuckle up, go, how could you not care about a guy who gets pasted so fast and loses despite his black belt pedigree in jiu-jitsu? So after that, I actually, there are lots of ways to move from don't care to care, and TJ found one of them. Lose spectacularly.
It's true, and he's riding a two-fight knockout streak on the wrong end. They're sending him down to Brazil. I don't think they're sending him down to get one of his patented submissions of the night, so it could be a short
enough. They're sending him down to Brazil in full-blown Hansel and Gretel fashion. Hey,
indeed.
TJ, hey, what you want something to drink? I'll be right back.
Get those right pebbles back. Give me those pebbles, kid. Give me the pebbles.
That's right. No pebbles for you, buddy. it's not a kiss of death. I mean, the guy is a jiu-jitsu guy, so what better place for him to, you know, redeem?
Exactly, to fight someplace where they boo as soon as the fight hits the ground, like.
Yeah, we invented it, but we don't care. You know, we're tanked up, we don't care. No. Oh, no, you're frozen. Oh, God. There you go. Hey, man.
No.
All right. There you are. I can hear you.
Okay, I can hear you too. So, Thiago Tractor, Mike De La Torre, featherweights.
Don't care.
Don't care either, although Tractor almost has... I know who he is, I just don't like him. Welterweight, William Macario versus Matt Dwyer.
Don't care.
No, nope, me neither. This card, I tell you. And this is the prelims headliner, women's bantamweight, Jessica Andrade and Marion Renault.
Yes, I care.
Yeah, Andrade is a pretty badass chick, I think.
Yep. Yeah. Who did she train with again?
Who does she train with? Let's see. I have no idea. It doesn't say on her wiki.
Where is she living now?
She's out of Brazil. She's out of Ururama, Paranha, Brazil.
Yeah, no, she's hot shit. She's good to watch. That's a care.
Absolutely, and she's got a 3-fight win streak.
Definite care.
All right.
I think I actually know her.
Oh, yeah? You should remember these things, Eugene.
No, I need to make a positive ID before I start sharing any tales, but I'm pretty sure. But in any case, she's a badass.
The kind of tales that you want to share. All right, so we've got the main card opener, featuring Sean Strickland against the man every MMA blogger and reporter hates the most, Santiago Ponzinibbio. This guy is cut and paste city. Like, you just try typing his name out 5 times fast.
I just call him Ponzi. Why? What's so hard? You know?
Hey! Yeah. Nobody's even going to get that. All right, so is that a character?
What do you think our audience knows about Ponzi schemes?
Maybe they know that. I was making a Fonzie joke.
Oh, Fonzie. I went straight with Ponzi. Hey, have you seen all these news reports about the FBI Freedom of Information stuff about Hitler's living in Argentina post-World War II?
I've heard you talking about it.
The Guardian, Daily UK, Daily Mail UK, all over the place, man. 4 or 5 articles in the last week. I feel somewhat vindicated, you know?
You need to post some of this stuff to your Facebook page. How are we supposed to... I've noticed about your Facebook page, every post is about you.
I guess you missed the meetings on Facebook at Facebook. What the hell are you thinking? It's supposed to. I'm still. My ethos is developed based on MySpace. MySpace. Mine. I. So, you know. Oh, you're frozen again, man. What are you using Wi-Fi or are you wired into the wall? I can hear nothing. It sounds like a Joy Division song. I haven't moved. Kid Nate! Ah, God, I'm floating. I'm like ground control to Major Tom. There you are. Now you're gone again. Hello.
I'm here. Keep talking.
I got it. I got you. So it's you who's dropping out, right? All right. Well, I'll just keep doing the show until Nate somehow figures out his problem. I'm going to start singing Sanford and Son songs, which was really Billy Eckstein. There you go. I hear something. Say something. No, you're just fucking with me,
man. Am I back?
Yeah, a little bit.
Nick? A little bit.
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay. Just keep talking. If
yeah,
if
I got you.
Keep talking. All right. Wow. So do we care about Ponzinibbio or not?
No, I don't care.
No, I don't either. Even though his name's hard to type, I do remember him for that reason. All right. Bantamweights, Yuri Alcantara versus Frankie Sines.
Yep, I care.
I care. This is the better of the Alcantara brothers. The little one is definitely the tough one. Definitely a care. All right. Lightweights, Adriano Martins against Rustam Khabilov.
Oh, yeah, like Khabilov has been, you know, part of the Dagestani dynasty.
He was hot stuff until Bendo snuffed him.
Yeah, but that's, you know, that's okay. That's
yeah, Bendo can snuff a lot of fools.
I'm still not understanding the whole toothpick weirdness, man. I, you know, both his continuing to use it and then people continuing to either be outraged or happy about it. It's like, I don't give a shit, you know. He could go in there with a butt plug. I don't give a shit. Just fight a fight, man. I refuse to have spent a minute talking about his toothpick, you know.
Oh, well, it's cheap social media clickbait. I'll tell you, that's why I like it. It's the only thing interesting. Yes, people will click on Benderson Henderson talking about his toothpick.
How come nobody started a Twitter account, Bendo's Toothpick? I'm surprised nobody's done that yet.
You know, it's just the level of careness around Bendo is limited. So
yeah,
this is what we got. Your butt plug joke makes me think of an Onion article about Ask a Frat Boy, and it was something about Chad's butt candle went out. Chad's butt candle went out. Kids drink.
You know what? A friend of mine in high school went through this phase where he was following his father. You know, he was like
a private eye.
Yeah, like he was cutting classes to follow his father.
Was his dad cheating on his mom or something?
No, his dad was spending a lot of time on 42nd Street when 42nd Street was like, you know, sleaze bucket. And he found this thing in his pocket, and he asked me what it was because he figured, you know, degeneracy that Eugene would know. And he like drew it on a piece of paper, and I was like, I have absolutely no idea. And then he came to school one day super depressed. And I go, what? He goes, I found out what that thing was. And I go, what was it? He goes, it's called the anal slip and slide.
Ew. Yikes.
It looked like a tampon on one end with a long handle. Yeah. I was like, man, that's why you don't follow your father, okay?
Yeah, there are just things you don't want to know.
Follow dad.
There are things you don't want to know. There was a great South Park episode where Butters follows his parents, and his dad's going out to the gay bar, and his mom's going to the bar and picking up dudes, and both of them living parallel lives of utter degeneracy. And poor Butters was clueless. Anyway, So Rustam Khabilov against Adriano Martins. I think it's a comeback fight for Khabilov if he hasn't had a soul snub. So
it's a comeback fight, or
or
a swan song.
absolutely. So next, we've got middleweight Cesar Ferreira against Sam Alvey, and I'm looking for Ferreira's nickname. What's his nickname? Nickname. God damn it.
Turbo. It should be Turbo.
These are Mutante. This is Mutante. So he's one of these Brazilian Ultimate Fighter guys. Do we care?
I like that band Os Mutantes, but I don't care about this fight.
That is a good band. A rare 60s band Eugene's interested in, but a remarkable one. All right.
Somebody at work said to me with a great degree of bitterness the other day, oh, I'm just sick of this thing where everything from the 70s was cool. I just did like this.
And then you put that Sales and Craft record right back on.
Making friends with coworkers. Dumbasses.
All right. So now we're to the co-main event. Lightweights Michael Johnson and Edson Barboza.
Yes, hell yeah, care. Big care.
Yeah, this is a definite care. I mean, Michael Johnson definitely, he's been on my radar for a long time, but he really won my heart when he just destroyed Joe Lauzon. But
so any kid of Don Johnson's, man, I love to watch that family.
Are you talking about Miami Vice Don Johnson?
Yeah, well, the only reason I make reference to that is because I don't know if you paid attention to it, but his daughter is in the number one hit in America right now, and it gives me the creeps.
What is it?
Dakota Johnson, 50 Shades of Grey.
That's Don Johnson's daughter?
Yeah, see, it's creepy now, right? It's creepy.
Everything's creepy about that movie, man. I mean, when I heard that there was a new Dirty Book that was taking the Housewives by America by storm, I was like, oh, right, I love Dirty Books, you know? And then I tried to read that shit, and that is just some awful fucking drivel. Did you read Ian Edwards' review of the movie?
No. I've stayed away from it because, you know, there's a great line from a Teddy Riley song. Jet Black Benz, Plenty of Friends. I got some news for you, buddy. You have a Jet Black Friends. You usually have plenty of friends. He didn't say Jet Black fucking, you know, Hugo, Plenty of Friends.
It's true. It's true. It's pure wealth porn. It's like get on your knees.
That's what it is.
And it's disgusting. Right. It's
like I saw Steven Tyler wear a T-shirt once that said "Eat the Rich." I'm like, "Eat the Rich." Oh, I got it. He's telling me to blow him.
Yes. And why? Because he's a wise and leathery old man.
Yeah. I like that cheesy shot of him shooting a selfie from his daughter's. She's giving birth in the maternity ward, live, and they're like smiling. As you people are fucked up, man. I've been in the maternity ward. I'm not snapping photos, you know.
I took pictures of the baby.
Yeah. I geeked out on the miracle of birth. I waited for a bit, man. I waited 3 minutes before I'm going to Instagram, you know.
Yeah, you got to wait. But Steven Tyler and Aerosmith, I got to say.
It's time.
It's way past time. They were fine in this. Forgive them for killing Run DMC, but
you know what? It was almost a double drowning.
Except it brought Aerosmith back to life.
Yeah, it's like standing on the shoulders of a dead man. There you go.
Exactly. It was hideous. Anyway, but Michael Johnson.
Care.
No relation to Don Johnson. Definitely care. He's running a 3-fight win streak, and Edson Barboza is like custom made for Johnson to feast on. I think.
Yeah. I'm not. Edson. The stumble has left me with questions about Edson that doesn't have me picking him in this fight. I'm gonna have to go with Johnson.
Yeah. Even though I've picked against him his last two fights, he beat Evan Dunham and Bobby Green, both of which I thought had a shot against him.
Well, Bobby Green was fucking around, man.
He really was. That was just
crazy. You
know? Yeah, that was. It was like he didn't care. But Michael Johnson, he's a pro. He's a brainy fighter. He cares. He'll be professional. His jab, and I think he saw the Varner fight. He knows he can blitz Barboza. He has to, so that should be a good one.
And Barboza is also, he's worried about seats for his, you know, the hometown curse. Seats for his mother, seats for showing off for his high school girlfriend, you know, whatever. It's a lot on your head, you know.
It absolutely is. Absolutely is. Although I don't know if he's from this part of Brazil, but, you know, to me,
whatever.
It's like
he's Brazilian. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like it's all your hometown, but it's a tiny little country, I hear. Anyway, ever tell you all the time
Boston is not a college town either.
Ever tell you all the time my daffy uncle bought some property in Brazil and then tried to actually locate it? He fell for one of these scams where you buy a plot in the middle of the Amazon jungle, and then he actually like went on a quest to find his property.
Is he still alive?
No, my uncle passed away about 15, 20 years ago. But,
did he pass away in Brazil trying to find that property?
No, he lived to a ripe old age at his dream home, which he never finished but did live in for 15 years. But he had a lemon tree in the greenhouse. That was one of his dreams.
That's
but
cool.
The part about the heater working, that was a dream he couldn't make true. But anyway, he took planes to get there. He took boats up the Amazon. He rode up a goat trail the Amazon, got within a couple hundred miles of his property, and then had to settle for a flyover, and realized. I don't know if he ever realized he had been taken. My uncle had a thing for the scams. Anyway, Heavyweight Antonio Bigfoot Silva versus Frank Mir. Headline.
It's kind of crazy, man. Let me start off with saying I care, but it's kind of crazy.
Have you seen the tweet meme, the last time Mir won?
Yeah, I have actually seen that. I think that's what got me thinking it was kind of crazy.
Yeah, when people are talking about the last time Frank Mir had a win, you know, it was like a lot of things were different.
You know what? And you know, this is kind of an example of Frank being a good company guy. I don't know if Frank had any real interest or excitement in doing this. I would guess he would, because presumably he's been training for it, but this just doesn't make any sense to me, you know.
No, but I mean, you know, Mir got to beat up Krokop when Krokop was way past.
You know, I mean, I guess maybe there's a great benefit to being able to say I still got it, but I don't know. Or what do you do? You know, I mean, I'm still trying to figure out what Chuck Liddell does after his terrible showing with.
Did you see his interview on Fox Sports on Monday?
You know, I'm sure other people are starting to think, wondering what he does too. You know?
you know, we were torn how to report that. I just went with, you know, the quote was, "These were pre-fight tests. I thought they were post-fight." Like.
Yeah, I
just want Chuck Liddell clears up questions about some drug tests.
I mean, I love Chuck Liddell, man. But you know what? There was a guy. I don't know. There was a guy who, when I worked at the Electric Power Research Institute,
Power Research Institute.
Yeah, right around the time that they deregulate utilities in California. So these guys were scrambling. They were a consortium formed by utility companies to stave off government involvement. And there was a guy there, John. I won't mention his last name. And, man, this guy was a fireball. He was a master. He was, you know, rushing. I mean, he was central casting, you know, corporate fireball, central casting guy. And he had some folder in his arms. Hey, John, one day I go, what are you rushing off to, man? He's like, I got to follow you. Got to figure out how you do. He goes, no, I go, what? And I pulled a full high school maneuver, snatched the folder from his hand. He's like, give me that folder. I go, hey, well, no, come on, is it top secret? And I open it up, and I look at it, and it was a flyer for a Toastmasters volleyball game. And it was like I saw naked pictures of him, you know, with his mother or something. We both look at it, and it got very quiet. I look at him, and I close it up, and I hand it back to him, and I, like, newfound respect. That guy had been there like 8 years, man, and it took him a decade to get rid of that guy, but he rode that for a decade. Chuck Liddell is on that same program. Nobody knows. What does he do? Nobody knows, huh?
Liddell earned it. I mean, if deserves a no-work job, it's Chuck Liddell.
And me.
Well, and me. I can get so much done.
Well,
I could get my Merle Haggard album collection just completely sorted. And
I've checked the list, and your name is after mine. So,
That's just because of seniority, strictly because of seniority.
Whatever.
So were you working for Enron? Is that what you're telling us? You were working for Enron when they were turning the power out on little old ladies?
No, EPRI, Electric Power Research. You know, I mentioned that in an interview. The local newspaper did an interview with me, and I mentioned that I worked there. The next day I went into work, and my boss called me in his office, and I thought he was going to fucking punch me in the face. He was like, I don't need you, you know, your little PR machine using us as a ploy to... I was like, whoa, relax, man. It's a matter of public record that I work here. He goes, you! And he was like, literally like shaking his head. Fist was balled up, and I just sat there looking, kind of smiling. I was like, go ahead. You know, because if you think I'm fighting you, you're so very wrong. I'm going for the long money, falling on the floor. I can't see. Yeah.
Did you see Afro Man punch a fan that got on the stage?
You know, I'm one for punching people in the audience, but I thought that was kind of uncalled for.
It was a bit much, especially when her head cracked into the stage and everything. It was just one of those things, like Fat Mike does this to some dude, and everybody's like, yo, Fat Mike's a badass, even when he kicked the guy when he was down. Afro Man does it to this little girl, and he walks off in handcuffs. But
well, you know, people that generally don't. It violates your sense of fair play to see somebody who's larger, you know. And it seemed to me, for all intents and purposes, that she was enjoying the show. I mean, you know, I remember having a show, and these two girls jump on stage, and I guess they thought we were the Go-Go's. because they had, you know,
frequent
they had,
confusion.
Yeah, they had ankle high kind of Chelsea boots on, and they were doing some wild Watusi like go-go dancers, and I was like, you know, that's kind of cool for half a song. I was down with that, and then we start the next song, and they're still there, you know. So I was like, you know, I got a couple of different options at this point. You know, I can attempt to disrobe them and have sex with them on stage, which, you know, can be
a time-tested rock and roll classic going back to MC5, Butthole Surfers. I mean, tons of people have done this.
Right, exactly. Or I could shove them over the PA stacks into the audience, but I didn't have to punch them in the face.
No. So what did you do?
I pushed them over the PA stacks into the audience and did not punch them in the face.
I see. Admirable restraint. Admirable.
And when they tried to climb back up again, I pushed them down again.
I was at Danzig one time, and he was holding. Guys were coming up, wanted to shake his hands. They were crowd surfing in the front, and Danzig would give him the handshake and then hold on to him and drag him on stage where the goons were then taking him back and just savagely beating him.
I kind of like that.
it was almost a Gigi Allen-esque move. One time, I didn't see this one personally, but every time I saw Gigi, he just threw feces around, and it was like a two-second show. But yeah. I heard about a show he played in Chicago in an abandoned theater where it was an abandoned church that they had turned into a punk rock haven, and there was sort of a belfry above the stage, and there was scaffolding in it, and Gigi realized mid-show he could jump up and climb up there.
Yeah.
And so he climbed up there and sang a song, and then he started beckoning people to come up.
Nah.
And so four or five idiots follow him up there, and Gigi whips the mace out of his drawers and just maces everybody, but Gigi didn't realize that the mace would rise.
Yeah.
And so they fall like bugs, boom, 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 and then the mace rises, and down comes Gigi. Ah!
That was great. That was, or like Steve Bader's when he hung himself in Palo Alto, thought, oh, this would be a great stage ploy. He had a super long mic cord, throws it over the rafters, takes a mic, wraps it around his neck, and jumps, and then realized, I'm really choking. That was great. Because the bouncers are all like, man, this is a great show. They didn't realize the guy was an actual, and his band just kept playing, you know. It was like,
they're pros. I think he knows what he's doing.
But the thing is, my favorite was when Rollins, a friend of mine, was a super huge Rollins fan, went to see the Rollins band play, and he's standing by the side stage, you know, and Henry comes walking up. He goes, oh, my God, here comes Henry. And Henry just walks up, looking right in his face, you know, expressionless, and he's about to say, hey, because they had friends in common. He's like, hey, man, Henry. And Henry, like, looking right through the guy, drops down in front of him and begins doing push-ups. So my friend gets kind of uncomfortable, and he starts kind of laughing, you know. Henry stops, looks up at him, and goes, huh, and walks off. And the guy goes, well, okay, that's cool. Henry comes back with two or three bounces and goes, hey, tough guy, you want to laugh now? And the guy just looks at him and goes, nah, Henry, it's cool. You know, and he left the show. How to turn a fan into a non-fan.
Henry was good at that. I saw Henry when the Dwarves opened for him, and they had some great Henry stories. They were just openly heckling Henry at all times. It was, what was that guy's name? Black Jesus.
Yeah, Black Dahlia.
That's right, Black Dahlia. And they would sit around, and they had all gone out and bought weights, but like 2-pound weights and 5-pound weights. And the guy of the Dwarves, he who cannot be named, who later got in trouble for faking his own death, he would sit there and heft his little 2-pound do curls and scream, do this Henry impression, what about my pain? Except he had this real squeaky little voice. He'd be like, what about my pain? What about my pain?
You see, Henry doesn't have, he laughed about the Glenn and Danzig book, but the Glenn and Henry book. But he doesn't have such a good sense of humor about himself either, man.
No.
What happened? What happened to that guy when he did that?
What, the he cannot be named?
Yeah.
They just heckled on Henry the whole tour. I mean, I say that,
but somehow one of the posters on some photo of mine talk about the show that we played in Bradford, where like some guy comes up to me, I'm playing on the stage, and he points down to his open shirt, and I see on his stomach that he's drawn a snake, like I have snake tattooed on my stomach. And I was like, oh man, this guy's got a great sense of humor. That means he'll appreciate my sense of humor. Yeah. And I arm drag him into a rear naked choke, and the guy was, he just on my Facebook page today, he's like posting, he's like, I thought I was gonna die. That hurt.
Where was this guy? Was this some European fan?
Yeah, it was in Bradford, which is like 30 minutes from Leeds, England. So, you know.
Well, the English should have some sense of humor. They're not like the Germans or the Poles or something where you're like...
No, that's what some guy, like I'm jerking off on stage and some guy's like, oh, I'm going to help him jerk off. So he comes up and tries to give me a helping hand. And I look down and I go, oh, you're offering a helping hand. Well, you know what's better than a helping hand? A helping mouth. So I grab the guy's head and begin trying to shove my penis in his mouth. And that's when all of a sudden the joke stopped. You know, I love getting things to that moment when the laughter stops.
How you didn't end up on TMZ like Afro Man, that's
well,
what you're
well,
asking
you know,
yourself now.
Is, you know, I mean, you know, I didn't really want my penis in his mouth. I was taking a gamble.
It was artistic.
I was taking a gamble that he would not want. I mean, had he actually wanted my penis in his mouth, I'd have been stuck. Yeah, I would have been tricked into homosexuality again.
That's what happened to Ernst Röhm, Eugene. That's what happened to Ernst Röhm. I've heard that Catholic priests are often baited.
Tricked into homosexuality as well. Damn it. Yes.
Damn it. It's fiendish. You can donish to me on this, but I've read about some dude who hung out with John Lennon one day in New York in the 70s. Mm-hmm. Yoko Ono, for some reason, was out of town, and Lennon was loose on the town. And he was describing how insane it was. Like, they were in a subway car, and he could feel the buzz as everybody was like, oh, my God, John Lennon's in the subway. And then it stopped, and the power went out. And he said that it was like a group grope, that everybody just was like, you know, like, since John Lennon was in the subway car, like, the 60s lived. And then, you know, they go on, they have three or four more bizarre adventures. And later in the day, Lennon starts getting drunk and surly and is like, I want a blowjob. And the guy's like, well, let's call some girls. I don't want to wait. I want a blowjob.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So what happened?
Well, him and the rock critic there looked at each other, and he was like, he goes, well, I'm leaving. And the rock critic stayed. So, you know, that's...
Hey, man. Hey. Well, you know, I told you that party in San Francisco where there's a line, and people, these guys, like, you know, the music is playing, the guy's online with a drink, and he's like, hey, what's a line for? So it's a line for the bathroom. Because people got to the bathroom. He goes, no, Chuck Berry is in there. So what?
Oh. I know where this is headed.
So Chuck Berry was playing that night at the Warfield or something. He's or you know Fillmore, and he's like, Chuck Berry's in the bathroom. It's like a house party in San Francisco. He's like, yeah. So the guy's like, fuck, man, I'm gonna stand in line. I want to meet Chuck Berry. And as he gets closer to the door, he sees the door come open, and Chuck Berry is fucking naked, sitting on the toilet. You know, doing all kinds of cocaine, allegedly. I wasn't there. And if people would come in, and he would talk to him, and say, oh, I'm a big fan. He was like, yeah. Go ahead. And they would blow him for a bit, and then he would tap him on the head after a few cursory sucks and go, okay, thanks. That's like, man, you know, I like Chuck Berry, man, but I don't like Chuck Berry that much.
I know, man. I mean, like, oh, my God. That's just, woo. I thought it was going to be one of these infamous Chuck Berry P stories because, you know,
I like that. I like that one, too. But, you know, he's the one who like a friend of mine, this woman, said, you got to pee on me. And my friend's comment was classic for the ages. He goes, what, on my bed? Chuck Berry was the first one that got people to think, you got to get in the tub before you're going to engage in.
Exactly. Chuck Berry knew what's what when it came to deviant sexuality.
It's not even past tense, man, to do.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, you should be so lucky to be in your 80s and still be creepy.
I know. And yet Jerry Lee Lewis has a new bio ghostwritten for him. Like, what does that guy have to do to get excommunicated? Like, Chuck Berry, ever since they found the videos that he was peeping in his amusement park bathrooms, he's basically been persona non grata. How many people does Jerry Lee Lewis have to allegedly kill with his bare hands before...
As long as he stays in that town in Texas, he's fine.
He's not in Texas. He's in Arkansas or Mississippi or Louisiana.
Oh, here's some local pride. Kid Nate trying to defend Texas.
Indeed.
All right. Like nothing bad ever happened in Texas.
Well, a few things. But, I mean, East Texas is basically Louisiana, but still, right. Louisiana is its own juju mojo thing, man.
Fish and kettle of fish.
Did you see that map that they put out where they mapped all the reported lynchings from the first half of the 20th century? Did you see where the big nexus was?
Where was it?
Mississippi Delta was like the biggest circle by far. I mean, the circle from the Mississippi Delta was coming out all into Tennessee and Alabama and Arkansas, and it was just fucking awful.
I know. I was interested that this has been the kind of a popular, common response to the whole ISIS stuff. It's really given me a certain amount of interesting pleasure, not for any political reason other than that I like uncomfortability. So the people say, yeah, these ISIS attacks are terrible. Actually, they're kind of like...
The first thing that springs to mind is what we used to do, what we have cut back on.
Right.
I don't know. I think it's good to have some consciousness raising and some awareness, because they definitely don't teach you that shit in school.
But at the same time, I'm always wary of people luxuriating in misery. You know, as far as I'm concerned, Facebook is an outrage generator, and people have gotten really addicted. The New York Times ran a piece about this woman, Justine Sacco, who did that thing about, oh, I'm a white woman, at least I won't get AIDS or something
like that. Yeah, I'm heading to Africa. Maybe I hope I don't get AIDS. Oh, I won't. I'm white. Yeah,
and the PR blowback, and then it was a whole thing about how the lynch mob. And I was like thinking, she actually stole my idea of, given my constituency, it wouldn't really work, but the nuclear bomb post, the one that just, you know, just destroyed. And apparently they talked to a bunch of other people who had, you know, Jimmy the Greek-like moments of, you know, immolation. And I was like thinking, you know, what happened to free speech?
It's true. You gotta pay the consequences for your speech. That's the thing. I mean, you own it. But the thing is, the trial by tweet is pretty merciless, because it turns out the lady was actually pretty conscious. She was African. Her family had been involved with the African National Congress for generations. I mean, there was an ironic comment that she didn't realize her audience didn't.
Or what was that UFC fighter? Or he was actually on the TV show who had put some tweet out. And the guy was biracial himself, and he was clearly trying to make some commentary, but people ran the wrong way with that ball and ended up kicked off the show and out of the UFC.
You know? Yeah, now he's been branded a racist. Yeah, that's – and, you know, if you look into hate, who's been charged with hate crimes, a disproportionate number of African Americans have been hit with hate crime charges. So,
something recently I proposed, I pitched a piece on – we had this whole section called Provocative Daily Topic.
And this is at Ozzy.com,
and I pitched a piece. So I'm putting my flag in the ground if anybody tries to steal it on Tom Metzger, you know.
White Aryan resistance.
Yeah, and he got sued because of the Suleta, the Ethiopian immigrant who got killed by skinheads up in Portland. But I don't want to do a piece on that or any of the other stuff. But I don't know if you've been to his website. But if you just go to Google and type in Tom Metzger cartoons, his cartoons, since Julius Streicher, the famous Nazi publisher, you know,
it was hung at Nuremberg.
Yeah, he was one of the small fish that they hung at Nuremberg. But he was actually really crazy. It was easy to throw him under the bus. But the cartoons that Metzger runs are completely the most offensively insane genius ever. And it's a real guilty pleasure of mine to go there and to read about. And he's not hitting any. I mean, he's hitting all the familiar targets, you know, mud people, which would be me, and the Jewish conspiracy and white man rise up. But it's just like, you know, Toni Morrison said, it's a disease. But sometimes seeing these diseases on parade, man, is really entertaining. You know,
I find racism pretty hilarious, because if you look into the history of any race, it's like, you think you're better than anybody? Like, you don't know your own history, and it's just...
Well,
it's
also, Metzger lives in his mother's house.
I know, Metzger is...
You know, this is like what the best the white race has to offer. I probably, you know, there are probably a lot of white guys, Tim Cook, you know, who differ, you know.
Metzger is hardly the uber mensch in action. He used to have a Access TV show back in the 90s that was...
I was trying to get on that show.
That would have been television master. He used to come on right after Madeline Murray O'Hare, the woman who was later murdered by one of her followers. Speaking of which, when's Sam Harris going to be charged with thought crimes for this follower of his that shot the three Muslim kids in Carolina?
I mean, well, that was over a parking spot.
Over a parking spot because there was a Muslim parking in the lot. That was the issue.
But actually, the guy was like he was a condominium cancer, one of those guys. He was kind of like Zimmerman, you know. So these guys running around your complex telling you, some guy in my neighborhood where my kids live is always walking his golden retriever, chases me down one day, goes, how you doing? I go, fine. He goes, you live here? I go, who are you? You know? And he goes, well, I go, actually, I remember you. You used to live on my old block on Bryant Street. He goes, oh, yeah, that's right. And we moved at about the same time, and we moved to this block at about the same time. He's like, well, nice to meet you. I go, great. Did you want something? Because you kind of came around that corner kind of fast. I go, it's 11 o'clock, man, at midnight. If you got kids playing outside at 11 o'clock close to midnight, they're probably bigger fish to fry. And the guy gets close to me. He goes, well, I'm just saying, and I smell this alcohol wafting off him. I go, you had a few. Huh? You celebrating something? You're celebrating Tuesday. Just get the fuck out of here. You know, don't tell me about driving fast in the neighborhood, you know. So.
Yeah. It's a lot of self-appointed policemen. Austin's having a little situation with that. Austin, Texas' most racist liberal city, is having some fun times with that in the new sexy Mueller development. Apparently, the neighbors have been calling police every time they see their black neighbors, you know, walking down the street. So, just
you know what? But I think black folks. See, this is where black folks. And I'm starting to work a comedy routine around it. The problem is, all of these cases were always precipitated, like the Indian grandfather who was paralyzed, precipitated by somebody calling the cops because something didn't seem right. But nobody ever does this to white folks, you know?
Dude can be walking down the street, like, just peeping in windows, jacking his crank.
Or John Gacy digging a hole at 4 in the morning in an alley.
I'm just running an unlicensed cemetery, man. Nothing to see. I mean, it should have been a parking ticket.
The cops will walk up, hey, John, you're planting early. He's like, yeah. The guy goes, okay, take it easy. Don't hurt yourself. And drives off. I mean, I'm fully... You know what? I believe in the police state. If I see a white guy and he's got a kind of a twitch in his eye, I call the cops. He's out there, man. There's a guy out there. His eye is kind of twitchy. I don't know what he's doing. And so, because I just need to level the playing field, because the cops are just like a computer, you know, or like an insurance actuarial table computer where they come in. It's like, I've got so many calls for this, so many calls for this. It's like, you know, I gotta change the numbers a little bit. So, you know, white guy screams a little too loud, I'm calling the cops. I think he's going crazy.
It's never going to work, Eugene, not in a racist system. They'll just come in.
Oh, you're wrong about that, man.
Eugene's counting the tables, one man resistance.
They killed that guy Kelly down in L.A., man, for sitting in a parking lot, you know?
Yeah, well, it is a murder machine. They will just grind up anybody that gets their sleeves cut.
I'm glad everybody's super excited about the Japanese running, dancing robots. But you got to realize this is policing of the future. Be nice to your human cops.
When are the human cops going to catch on to the fact that they're about to be redundant and useless?
Yep. Yeah, they need to go to a gas station and ask the ATM to change their wipers and
wash
their windows.
What's Gomer Pyle doing these days?
Yeah,
he's not pumping the gas. So, yeah, I'm worried, though. Like, what are the cops going to do when they're laid off en masse? I mean, I think that's when the rich people are going to suddenly have trouble on their hands.
Yeah, right.
Or they'll just turn them against the rest of us, which is historically what they've been so good at. But anyway, we've gotten enough paranoid, ranty enough. This is the Care Don't Care preview for cage fighting. After all, this is supposed to be light entertainment. Not a paranoid peep into the deviant minds of two middle-aged men who've seen too many.
Middle-aged?
Two youngsters. Two weapons.
No, I'm going the other way, man. You think I'm going to live to 106?
Could be. I like to be optimistic. I feel good, like I've got 90 in me.
My good, clean living. There's no drug testing for MMA journalists, is there?
All they have to do is look at your pics, Eugene. All they have to do is look at your pics.
He's on something.
I mean, a lot of people were very generous with the benefit of the doubt the time that you picked both sides in a fight and then devoted a whole episode to crowing about how you got
everybody knew. They know that knuckle up is a gold standard. I'll say anything when I'm on your show.
People charitably said, oh, that Eugenie was probably drunk or high. That's
you said that. Nobody else said that.
I speak for the masses, Eugene.
Yeah, I am Kid Nate.
All right, well, that's our show. Remember, follow us on YouTube, MMANation.com on YouTube. You'll get all the magic every episode. You can watch live like the lucky 20 viewers that are watching right now.
All right!
Woohoo! Double digits. Follow us on Twitter, at Kid Nate, at Eugene S. Robinson. You can read me at BloodyElbow.com. You can see Knuckle Up on Mondays with Eugene on BloodyElbow.com. You can read Eugene at Aussie.com.
I got a piece tomorrow on Times Square.
In the old days, the good old days.
Times Square via the movies. I go from 59 to the 2000s. It's a great coverage. Yeah.
I see. Well, that sounds interesting. I'm sad for the old taxi driver, 42nd Street. You know.
That's what I was talking. I talk about that, but I start with John Cassavetes' Shadows, and I go straight through Vanilla Sky.
Do you talk about The Howling? Do you remember that movie?
It's a great movie. I loved it. I did not talk about The Howling.
Oh, man, the scene where she goes to... And I don't even know if it's Times Square, but it's a place like Times Square, and the creepy werewolf's waiting for her in a peep show booth. Anyway, that scene demented me as a child, so it's responsible for everything.
Okay. Let's blame the movies.
Got to blame something, Eugene. Got to blame something. Yeah. Anyway, you can also read Eugene at Vice's Fightland and his book, the classic, Fight, Everything You Ever Wanted to Know About Ass Kicking, But We're Afraid You Get Your Ass Kicked for Asking.
Huh? And also, I closed down the connection. These guys, actually in Texas, who used to run our store, they tried to hit me with a $100 a month fee, which is crazy, so I closed it down. So until they sell out, I have a bunch of fight books, a bunch of long, slow screws, a bunch of plays. I will, and T-shirts as well, so I will sign it. I'll sell it to you. I'll sign it. So, Pinko, P-I-N-K-O, 950-14 at yahoo.com. You PayPal me some money, I'll send you stuff.
I see. Eugene's Garage is open for business. All right. So, we'll be back with the vivisection tomorrow. Then we'll have the sixth round Sunday night after the fights. Eugene, will you do Knuckle Up on Monday, even though the fights are Sunday night?
Yes, I will, because I'm that type of guy.
Eugene is the most reliable person I've ever worked with in my life, and I've worked with Enron, I got to say, and those guys were punctual.
Hey, man, you got to be punctual when you're stealing money from widows, you know?
And anybody that came in contact with them, still the best grifters
hey,
I've ever.
Where's my wallet? Jeffrey Skilling, right? Wasn't that his name? Skilling.
That was one of the big fish. I didn't work at that level, but worked with some serious cats, some of whom made it off to the islands with their fuck you money.
That's why you got so much nice shit around you. Look at
you. my treasures, the glitter painting, the victory belt, complete collection of victory belt classics, my alarm clock speaker. All right, anyway, that's enough of the lifestyles of the rich and famous. Eugene, we'll be back next week. Adios, MMA aficionados. This is Kid Nate. We'll see you next time. Thanks, Eugene.
All right, man. Bye.